Good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Oksana Cottrell. I am co-president of Black Student Union, or BSU, here on campus, and I'd like to welcome you all to our first Black History Month chapel. We're just really thankful that Bob Zellner is here, and I hope others of you are as excited and interested as I am in what he has brought to share with us this morning and throughout the day, because he has various activities on campus today. So yeah, I ask that you sit back, relax, and enjoy chapel today.
Good morning. My name is Tay Dews, and I'm co-president of Black Student Union, and I will lead us in prayer. God, thank you for this space. I ask that you allow the Holy Spirit to fill us up, to allow our ears to open and to hear the word that is coming to us. God, we are grateful that Bob traveled all the way down here to minister the word to us. God, thank you for everything that you've done, and in your name I pray. Amen.
Activities Coordinator of BSU, and I will be introducing the speaker. From a family line of KKK members, Bob Zellner became one of the first white Southerners to engage in the early civil rights movement. Bob stands for democracy, equality, and justice. Bob became the first white field secretary for SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, often facing fierce criticism from the white community and initial distrust from the black community. Now in his memoir, Zellner tells how one white Alabamian joined ranks with the black students who were sitting in, marching, fighting, and sometimes dying to challenge the Southern way of life. He was in all the campaigns and was close to all the major figures, The Wrong Side of Murder Creek is Bob Zellner's larger-than-life story, and he is telling it. Please welcome Bob Zellner.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here this morning. And being an organizer, I don't mind asking you to do something. And I'd like to get close together. I'm not way up there. And I got all these empty seats right here. All of the activists here, people who want to make a difference, move from the back rows just quietly and reverently, if you will, stand up and join me down here so we can have a conversation. It's not a speech, it's a conversation. It's a give and take. I'm working very actively now in North Carolina with Mayor Adam O'Neill, who's over here. Mayor, would you please stand up? Mayor Adam O'Neill is from Belhaven, North Carolina, and we are working together to bring people together, closer together. And I like this much better. Thank you. I am Bob Zellner, and I grew up in L.A., in Lower Alabama. Not exactly progressive territory like we're in today up here with you all. And it was very unlikely that I would ever be a part of the civil rights movement. Daddy was in the Ku Klux Klan, and Granddaddy was in the Ku Klux Klan, which was quite a drawback right there. And I remember that when my father really became a Christian and left the Ku Klux Klan, his father disowned him, my grandfather disowned him, and his brothers never spoke to him again in his whole life. And I never understood as a young person how devastating that could be, to be rejected by your own mother and your own father and your blood brothers and sisters. But my father believed in brotherhood and sisterhood so strongly that he was able to take that step. It made it easier for me growing up and my four brothers in the Methodist Church. My father became a Methodist minister, and when he left the Ku Klux Klan in Alabama, South Alabama, he began to work with Joe Lowry and Reverend Martin Luther King to really confront the segregation and the separation in the Christian church. So that was the background that I grew up with. My father had challenged me in his preaching to study the gospel of Jesus Christ and try to justify that with one's life. And he had to make those hard, hard choices. So I was grateful to grow up in small towns in South Alabama and Northwest Florida. And I graduated high school at Murphy High School in Mobile, Alabama in 1957. I went to Huntington College, which was our church school in Montgomery, Alabama. And I began to have some experiences there in college, which you're having now, that changed my life. And one was I remember a sociology course that I was in. I was studying sociology, psychology, history, and we were in advanced sociology class, and we were all assigned a paper to study the racial problem and write a paper about it. We were in a class in race relations, and that was perfectly normal in 1959 or 60 in Montgomery, Alabama. But you were supposed to understand that you did your research in the library. So we did all our research in the library, and then we told our professor, Dr. Arlie B. Davidson, that we wanted to go and talk to Martin Luther King and Mrs. Rosa Parks and Mr. E.D. Nixon, who worked together to make the Montgomery bus boycott, which we see now as the beginning of the modern civil rights movement. And our professor said, well, you can't do that. And we said, why? And he said, why, you'll be arrested. Well, being young sociologists, our sociological imagination was piqued by the idea that we might be arrested doing research for a paper. So we tried to correct our professor. We said, you know, we have the First Amendment in the United States, and we also have the Methodist Church that advises us to please step across racial and dividing lines. And we said, we're going to go. So to make a long story short, we asked Dr. King. And in those days, if you wanted to meet Dr. King, you had to go to federal court or somewhere. So five little white students from the sociology class at Huntington College went to the courthouse in Montgomery, Alabama, and we could find Dr. King there, and we spoke to him in the hall, the five of us little white boys. And we said, we'd like to come to your church. We know there's a workshop next Saturday at Reverend Abernathy's church, and you're speaking, and Mrs. Rosa Parks will be there, and we're in a sociology course at Huntington, and we'd like to come. So Dr. King, I could tell that he was intrigued by the idea, and he said, well, you're welcome to come, but you have to be prepared to be arrested. Well, our eyes got about that big, and we said, that's what our professor said. And he said, well, that's why he's a professor. He knows that. So, but we said, we think we have a right to come, and if we are arrested, we'll just be arrested, but we're not demonstrating, we're just trying to learn. So he said, well, come on. So we went to the meeting, and sure enough, at the end of the meeting, a wonderful meeting, the first time I heard Dr. King preach, and at the end of the meeting, he came over, and I thought with a twinkle in his eye, he said, well, the church is surrounded, the police are out there, the news is out there, and they've sent word that the five of you are going to be arrested. And I said, Dr. King, we need to escape. So he said, well, you remember that little workshop we had about you might be arrested? I said, well, Dr. King, we need to try to escape because we don't want to get our parents in trouble, we don't want to get our school in trouble, and so forth. He said, okay, I understand what you mean. So he said, I tell you what, I'll go out the front door, and if all the police run around there, Reverend Abernathy and Ms. Rosa Parks can take you down to the basement, and there's a back door, and you can run for it. So sure enough, Dr. King went to the front of the church, and while we were waiting for the signal to go out, Mrs. Parks touched me on my left elbow. Mrs. Rosa Parks, that quiet saint of granite that everybody said she was just tired and couldn't get up from the bus seat. She was a NAACP activist, secretary of the local NAACP, and she touched my shoulder, my elbow. I haven't washed that elbow since then. And she said, Bob, students, when you see something wrong, you have to take some action. You have to do something. You can study it as much as you want to, but this needs action. And she said, you have a special role because you are white people. You're white. You're from Alabama. We need you. We need you to take action. So I'd never had has anyone ever had such a commission in the civil rights movement? So how could I not get involved? And to make a very long story short, you can read it all about it in the book, The Wrong Side of Murder Creek, soon to be a major motion picture. Dr. King did go out the front door. The police all ran around there, the press all around there. And they opened the back door, and the funniest thing you've ever seen is five little white boys running all out through the black community in Montgomery, Alabama, trying to escape from our own police. Because overnight, we had become dissenters. We were going to a private school, getting a great education. We were not only white, we were young, and we were males, guys. The most privileged class in the whole history of human beings. And now, because we did what? Went to Reverend Abernathy's church, a black church, and heard a black man preach about the gospel of Jesus Christ. We were now outlaws. And we were not to be trusted. The Klan burnt crosses around our dormitory. We were asked, the five of us were asked by the college president to resign from school. We had to resign from college, even though two of us had already been given the highest honors of the class. But we had to leave now because we had disgraced our college. We disgraced everybody. We were called into the office of the Attorney General of the state of Alabama. This is how bad it was. I'm telling you how bad it was just 50-something years ago in the Deep South. And I remember the Attorney General looked at all of us and he said, "You have fallen under the communist influence." And we said, "You mean there's communists in Alabama?" And he said, "No, but they come through here." The Mennonites and the Friends, and the YMCA and the National Church people, they come through here. You're falling under the communist influence. So you see how similar that is to today? We think that we have people who think that President Obama was a communist or a socialist. He's very conservative, actually, more conservative than some of us would like. But that's how it was then, and they're trying to revive a lot of that now. That's what we're talking about today, about Martin Luther King. That's why we're talking about lunch counter sit-ins and freedom rides and that glorious history that we share together. So that's my mission. That's my mission here, is to tell about what it was like to be a part of that when people took risks. What Mrs. Rosa Parks was asking me to do, and the rest of us students, is to take a risk. If there's anything worth fighting for, you have to take a risk for it. So my challenge today to young people is, what would you take a risk for? And I know that you would risk your life for some things, I'm sure. If somebody attacked your mother, your father, your child, you would place your life there. Well, that's what happened in the student movement, in the civil rights movement, fighting for the right to vote. And when anybody tries to restrict the vote in any sense whatsoever, that is not a good thing. You understand? That's not a good thing. We need to have voting so that it's one of the easiest things you can possibly do. In North Carolina, we have a situation where we were taken over by extremists. I'm not saying Republicans. Now we don't talk in terms of Republicans, Democrats, and so forth. But the House in North Carolina, the Senate, and the governorship were all taken over by extremists. And they instituted the most extreme voter registration restrictions since 1965. When that Voting Rights Act was earned by the blood of people on the Selma Bridge and on the march to Montgomery, my own home state. So that's what we're faced with now. We never thought after the Civil Rights Movement that women's rights would be challenged again, that we would want to go back to an all-white ballot box, that labor rights would be challenged again. All of those things are under challenge again. And the way that we meet that challenge, I think, is to reach across and to do away with the hyper-partisanship that we're now faced with and say, we can reach across on the things that we agree on. Tonight, the mayor and I are going to have a conversation with whoever can come about the Belhaven Hospital. That's the situation in North Carolina where people got together around something that was practical. And this is happening in a lot of rural areas. Big corporations are taking over small hospitals in rural areas. They're closing them up to concentrate the money and the patients and so forth in some of their bigger centers. When they closed the hospital in Mayor Adam O'Neill's town, he said, "I'm responsible." That's a town that's predominantly black. That's a town that's predominantly Democrat, actually. And Mayor O'Neill is a person of faith. And Mayor O'Neill said, "It's a responsibility that I have to get this hospital back open, because the corporation that took it over is a nonprofit. It's a multi-billion dollar corporation. And when they closed the hospital in Belhaven, it left a 130-mile gap between hospitals in eastern North Carolina. the Black Belt of North Carolina, the farming areas of North Carolina, 130 miles, so that people that were 20 minutes from an emergency room in Belhaven now have to add another half an hour. So that golden hour has gone away. People are dying. And Mayor Adam felt so strongly about it, he teamed up with Reverend Barber and the NAACP, other people in North Carolina. And as old as I am, 77 years old, he's much younger, 50-something, I think. He's a young fellow. We walked twice now from Belhaven, North Carolina to Washington, D.C., 287 miles in 14 days to save that hospital in Belhaven, to reach across lines. And we had Tea Party people and Trump supporters and NAACP people and civil rights organizers and white Republican mayors walking together to do what? Something that we all agreed on, that rural people deserve and have to have health care. And you can't have a situation where corporations actually take lives to make money. And this is a nonprofit corporation, Vidant Corporation, look it up. And they felt so strongly about destroying that hospital that even though there were other groups trying to get the hospital and reopen the hospital, they tore it down. So you can look at pictures now of a perfectly good, wonderful hospital, the first, one of the first Hill-Burton hospitals ever built in the United States for the specific purpose. Adam, yes, what? It was the first Hill-Burton hospital ever built in the United States for the purpose of providing rural health care. And here's a corporation that felt so little responsibility to poor people, to black people, to farmers, to seafood workers and so forth, that they closed that hospital and people started dying. For a 16-year-old boy was hurt by farm equipment. You know about farm equipment, right? He was run over by farm equipment and he was in the field and he waved and somebody stopped and he would have been what? How far from the hospital?
10 minutes.
10 minutes from the hospital where he could have gotten blood. He could have, they could have kept him from going into shock. And by the time the helicopter got there to take him, he was unstable. And the helicopter wouldn't take him to the next hospital, which he'd have to go to, because that hospital was closed. And the little 16-year-old boy bled out in that field while they waited for an ambulance then to come and take him. So this is the situation where people close up a perfectly good hospital to make more money, and they cost lives, and they don't care about that. So that's what I'm talking about. When we have to take risks for the common good. Also, we have such a partisan situation that we think that if we're for the common good, that we're not for individual rights. If we're for individual rights, we're not for the common good. Well, I think if you're going to be doing something for the common good, you need to make sure that you take care of individual rights and freedoms and liberties as well. And if you want individual freedoms and liberties, you need to take care of the common good. So these are the ways that we come together across these partisan lines, across these race lines. When I grew up in LA, Lower Alabama, working with SNCC, the first 36 months of my work with SNCC, 8 of my comrades were murdered. They were lynched and killed because we were doing what in Mississippi and Alabama? Registering black people to vote. We talked about black and white then. Now we talk about gay and straight. We're talking about immigrant, native. We talk about Native Americans, Latinos. We are multicultural now and multi-issue. And one of the things that we tried to do in North Carolina, and you know it's not covered by the major media, by the way. We've had, I've been arrested I think 18 times. I can't count them up. The last time I was arrested was at the State House in Raleigh, North Carolina. 17 of us were arrested at the State House because they had passed up expanding Medicaid in the county. In the whole state, they were permitting the closing of the rural hospitals and all that, we didn't know anybody else would come and be arrested. Since then, over 1,000 people have been arrested. Did you know that? At the State House in Raleigh, North Carolina. We had demonstrations of 80 to 100,000 people in Raleigh, North Carolina. The largest civil rights demonstrations in the history of the civil rights movement, basically, in the South, and not covered. So I don't think you've heard about that. I don't think you've heard about the fusion movement in North Carolina. So come this evening and let's talk some more. You know that I learned a couple of things, very important lessons from Dr. King, and I'm going to talk more about my relationship with Dr. King. I was in jail with him, and there's very few people left who were in jail with Dr. King, who marched with Dr. King. Unfortunately, I'm white, but I'm still carrying that message. And part of the message that I carry is that the movement was black and white, and it's still black and white. But they taught me that brotherhood and sisterhood is not so wild a dream as those who profit by postponing it pretend. So I pray to God to give, grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, but to please give me the courage to change the things that I can change. And people working together, we can change this country and keep it going in a good direction and not send it back to the past. Thank you so much.
Well, I wish we could give an honorary master's in conflict transformation degree to Bob Zellner. Can we do that? Honorary alumni? Yeah, our provost says yes. We do look forward to continued engagement. The first opportunity is a talk back, a conversation. We're going to circle up with however many join us in the Campus Center Greeting Hall for the next hour. Tonight at 7 p.m. in Martin Chapel is the public lecture where you heard that Bob Zellner and Mayor Adam O'Neill will be having an exchange as the presentation, and there will be some time for questions and response. And then at the Questions After Dark event, primarily for students in North Lawn Great Lounge, 8 p.m. this evening. If you are eager to join some of the student leaders from the various clubs and organizations that are sponsoring this day, and that's Black Student Union, Student Government Association, Campus Ministries with the Pastoral Assistance, and Multicultural International Student Services. We will be in the dining hall just around one of the round tables, both from 11:30 to 1:30. And if there's room at the table, then pull up a chair. Let's see, the books are available, $30, 50 cents, and worth every penny. And I imagine you would sign them if someone buys the book, and you'll he's not going to sit at the table. He's going to be talking to people all day, so you'll have to bring your book to Bob and say, would you please sign that? Furthermore, last year, Celeste Thomas and Black Student Union and YServe launched the first ever Spring Break Civil Rights Tour. Registration for this year's Civil Rights Tour is open. To date, no one has registered, even though 5, 10, and 12 people have registered for the other four spring break trips. We're just thinking you're a little slow. $250, scholarships are available, and you can register online or in our offices. We'll send a link later today about that. Civil Rights Tour, if you went on that tour, raise your hand last year. So talk to these folks. I went on it. It was amazing. It was amazing. And I know, Bob, you've led some tours like that. I heard about that.
Yeah, I'm going to be with 53 students soon from Seattle, Washington, University of Washington.
53 students from Seattle, Washington on a tour like that. Well, at any rate, we hope that this has not been simply sit back and relax like Oksana invited us to, that you've been challenged and inspired, maybe even disturbed a bit, to get active. Go in this kind of peace. Amen.